Coming up on today's show, we have a lot of news in the galaxy. Since we have so much, let's rock out this week on Traveling with the Mouse. Welcome, everyone, to episode number 323 of Traveling with a Mouse. I am your host for this week. I am actually not scheduled to be your host because I am joined by Jason. Oh, nope. I'm sorry. I'm not joined by Jason. He's the one that's missing. I am joined by Adam.
What's up, everybody? I'm here.
I don't get to do any cool line, I guess, now from...
Rock and Roller Coaster. Do you want me to intro you so that you can do that?
Well, since you've already given it away.
Oh, sorry. Well, you said rocking at the start of the show.
Well, I mean, you know, that was cryptic.
Was it?
I could have done a Star Tours reference.
Star Tours reference?
Yeah, because of all the Star Wars stuff that we saw recently.
Wait, did something happen in Star Wars news? I didn't hear.
Well, I mean, they maybe just might have said something involving the Galactic Cruiser.
Yeah. Like itineraries, prices, food options, those kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just little stuff, little things. Like the price is little as well, right?
Yep.
But I think maybe we'll save that for closer to the end because it's probably what we're going to talk about the most at the when it's all said and done. We'll stick with all really big stories this week because why don't we talk about how they have registration for Walt Disney World annual pass holder previews for Remy's Ratatouille Adventure.
I've been checking my email every day, but nothing. DVC is getting one too. Well, they announced that first, but annual pass said it would be coming. Yeah.
It made it seem as though they were going to get DVC before annual pass, or do you think they're going to be roughly the same time? Because I don't recall DVC getting this sort of privilege in the past.
I'm trying to think, did they get one for Galaxy's Edge? Maybe, but I know, that's a good question.
Pass holders.
I know pass holders did, but yeah.
I think they're trying to throw some love to the DVC members here as of late. Probably because the sales have not been as good, at least the new sales. Yeah. So awesome. Maybe they're trying to give incentive for buying DVC.
Yeah.
But they're referring to this as a squeak peek.
Right, of course. Ha ha.
Ha ha. Right. Because the attraction is going to open on October 1st. You got to think they're going to have to announce when this is going to be very soon because we're inside of 2 months.
It's been ready since like March 1st, so they need to let some people ride it.
Yeah. I mean, I think this thing's probably been ready since January.
Maybe even before that.
All we know. At least it's not collecting dust. Like they've probably done some things. Cast members, of course, will be able to preview this as well. They're probably going to get to do it first.
Maybe, yeah. So I would imagine the month of September, they'll probably have, you know, a week of cast members, a week of DVC, and then a week of pass holder slots that you can reserve.
Right.
I have a trip booked at the end of September, so I'm hoping that it just so happens to be that time period where I can book one.
So what day is at the end of September? Because we actually are probably going to go to that area with friends like mid of the first week of October.
Oh.
That's
so
the idea.
Be hanging around during the 50th kickoff?
Kind of.
You might try to show up to see what it's like.
The dates that would work best for us start on Wednesday, October the 6th, so it'll actually be just after.
Okay. Just after. The week we're looking, the weekend would be the weekend before the 50th. It would be the 24th of September.
Yeah, so when you're looking at going.
So hopefully there'll be a preview that weekend.
Well, maybe. Disney put this on the back burner. The way things worked out with COVID and everything, it was pretty much going to be the only new thing there that they could possibly spring on you for the 50th. So.
Right.
Other than shows and fireworks and such, but
right.
It was going to be the only new attraction that was going to be even close to available ready.
That's so, clearly why they held it to this date. I mean, there was no other reason.
There was some speculation that some of this other stuff might would have been ready in time, but as time went on, it came pretty obvious that that wasn't going to happen. So,
right. Tron was supposed to be open, but of course you can look at it and see that it's definitely not anywhere near being ready.
And I think back whenever we were expecting Ratatouille to open earlier, we still had at least the idea, we thought, well, they could potentially finish Tron between now and then, and that, and then it, you know, just seemed to drag on. And
yeah, they even halted construction for a while.
Yeah,
it seemed. Speaking of Tron, really quick, did you see there's this mystery building or mystery structure? It's they're building up next to where the canopy part is. No one really knows what this is going to be yet. It's over at the Barnstormer side. So if you're over there, you can see there's clearly a fairly sizable structure being built that doesn't appear to be in any of the concept art.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, is this part of the railroad tunnel? Maybe, but this is an awfully big railroad tunnel. If it is. So it's already like two stories tall at this point. Maybe three, looks like, potentially.
Hmm.
Yeah, it just looks interesting. It came up in the last couple of weeks. So some people thought maybe it's going to be like bathrooms or something, but it doesn't really seem like it's going to line up with the pathway. So
wouldn't that be an awfully, wouldn't that be like the shortest distance between bathrooms like ever? Because there's some just like right across the way.
Who knows?
Well, I got to thinking as far as like just outside the attraction. Of course, I don't know where the exit to Tron is going to be at this point, but
I think the exit will be on the Space Mountain side.
Okay, so if it's on the Space Mountain side, don't they still have the bathrooms right over there where the...
Yeah, where the extended queue is essentially for Space Mountain.
Yeah, kind of
right
like
now.
That.
Yeah.
Don't they still have those right there? So why would they have bathrooms?
Yeah, so this may not... Maybe it's another Space 220. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
It's probably going to be the extended shop. That's what you're going to do right there.
Exit to the gift shop? Yeah, I don't...
Yeah.
I don't know, but whatever it is... It's coming up quickly, and it looks to be at least two stories high so far. So,
yeah,
whatever it will be.
Well, we'll keep our eye on it for sure.
Yeah.
And see if we can see anything.
I just thought that was interesting.
We'll see what develops.
Yeah.
Let's go to the West Coast, because they started announcing that they're going to resume annual pass sales.
Yes.
They have the levels and pricing announced out there. Did you ever find out what the how many levels they had before versus this? Because I didn't think it was exactly the same.
It wasn't, but it's very similar. The highest level was the Premier, which was the Florida and California. And that's not even an option right now, which maybe it never will be again. But I think that one was 2,200 or something.
Yeah, it was
in 2019.
I thought it was a little more than that, but
it may have gone up again. The prices had just jumped quite a bit right after Galaxy's Edge opened, and in that time frame, right before COVID hit. But I remember there was a signature pass that was $1,399, which is in line with what the most expensive one was there. There was another one that was $1,149, and then one that was $799, and then they may have had a cheaper one. That was a California resident only. That's more in line with what the Imagine Key is.
Yeah, so that's what we're about to get at. So
yeah,
the annual pass program, they don't have annual passes anymore. They just renamed them to Magic Keys.
Right.
So I don't know if they're literally going to look like keys, but...
That would be funny if you got like a giant key that you have to walk around with all day.
This is what you have to do. You have to unlock it. So the Dream Key, as we were just talking about, that's the most expensive.
Yep.
It is $13.99. Those with the Dream Key, they don't have any blackouts.
Yeah.
They can have 6 theme park reservations at a time.
Yep.
And you can book them 90 days in advance. It includes parking, and they also get discounts.
Nice.
They get 20% off merchandise and 15% off dining.
Correct.
Yeah. So on that one. And then there's the Believe Key, which is at $949. And they can do 6 reservations at a time as well, but there will be some blackouts for them. They get 50% off parking, so parking's not included with that one, 10 off merchandise, and 10 off dining.
Right.
So slightly downsized.
Right.
So I'm looking at that, though, the difference between the two. So you got $13.99.
Yeah.
What is that? That is $350. Am I doing my
it's
math
like
right?
$450. Four forty-eight difference. I think it's worth that extra money because the other thing that I don't know if this is just for California residents, but they do have the option for monthly payments on all these, mm-hmm. which is great for that.
Exactly. Let me finish the other ones. So we have the Enchant Key, which is $649. They can have four theme park reservations at a time. Of course, there's more blockout dates.
Yeah.
They also get the 10% off merchandise and 10% off dining, right?
Right. But no parking.
No parking. You have to pay for parking.
Yeah.
The Imagine Key is the lowest tier available to Southern California residents only in this case.
Yep.
Two theme park reservations. Of course, they're going to have the most blackout dates. I would be very curious to see what these calendars look like.
Yeah.
Of course, throughout the year, all these Magic Key holders will have special benefits, such as dedicated dining experience and custom menu items and so on and so forth, right? There's going to be the little perks and all this good stuff. So they start as low as $399 or $19 a month for 12 months. You know, that's an example of what mm-hmm. you can do. So you can pay for it monthly. You can just add it on as another subscription. California residents, pretty much, that we all have.
Yeah, basically, I mean, cancel Netflix and Hulu or something and then get your Disneyland pass, but you won't be able to go very much. But
yeah, there you go.
And you got to pay for parking. And
unless you're going to do the, like, I don't know, what would it be for the $13.99 a month?
$103 or something like that. I forgot what it was. Something like that, yeah.
So, yeah, a little bit more expensive streaming that you might have to cancel. But yeah. All right, so going along with this, Walt Disney World has announced that they're going to resume annual pass sales before the 50th, or by the 50th, I should say.
By October 1st. That
could mean that they're going to do it on October 1st.
Probably.
It's like, that's the other thing they're going to offer. It's like Ratatouille's opening. Oh, and you can buy an annual pass starting on this.
Try to upsell the folks that are there on the enormous crowd that will be there on the 50th.
Right. They'll probably get some kind of a deal on an annual pass if you're there on that day. I don't know. Not likely.
Overall, though, I've listened to several of the California folks I follow talk about this. They're pretty happy with this because I think they were expecting either the price to be a lot more or a lot of the other benefits to be stripped out.
I think everybody was expecting worse.
Yeah.
I was kind of shocked.
There are a few things that are limited, and there's a few things that I think are coming to Florida annual passes as well. Even if you go with the highest tier, obviously the biggest limit over what an annual pass used to be was you could go any day you wanted to. Now you have to book up to 6 reservations at a time.
90 days in advance.
Right.
You're
limited to some potential availability issues. Even, you know, with no blackout dates, you still got to score a reservation.
See, and this is one thing I don't really like is that the fact that they worked reservations into this suggests what we've kind of feared is that reservations aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely, they're not going away at all. I don't think that's ever going to go away now.
We used to talk about the death of the spontaneity of dining. Now it's the death of the spontaneity of park going has pretty much come. Unfortunately.
Basically, yeah. And I think this is their way of combating the crowds without having to raise the price to try and price people out. They're trying to offer, I mean, like the Imagine Key is like, they're giving some people a very cheap annual pass, but there's going to be, you know, you got to pay for parking. You have a very limited calendar of days you can go. You can only have 2 reservations at a time. So there's a lot of more limitations, but it is affordable for a lot. So
here's my thing with the reservation part.
Yeah.
Okay, you're going to have so many numbers of reservations, but yet it seems like you're still going to try to fill the park as full as you possibly can by keeping, you know, X number of reservations available. I think it's more or less about them trying to have control of knowing who's going to be where, when.
Right.
More than anything else, because they're not doing it to control population. Because if they could sell the thing to what they know is capacity reservation wise, they would. If they they would take that many reservations, I guarantee you.
Right. Well, they frequently raise and open up more reservations. I think they limit it to some degree, and then they're like, well, more people are trying to get this day or they want this day. Like Disney World, October 1st, they've opened it up numerous times for more reservations, so right. It's going to look like Christmas Day at Magic Kingdom on October 1st.
That's why I say it was all a degree of control, because all they're wanting to know is what to expect and what to plan for themselves.
So obviously that's on a day like Christmas or New Year's or a day like the 50th anniversary, they're going to have all hands on deck at Magic Kingdom, so they're going to have 100% capacity, pre-COVID 100% capacity for that day only, and then a few days after that maybe, but otherwise they're going to lower it back down to the 50 or whatever they've been holding it at. But for certain occasions like Christmas, I guarantee you it'll be back up to the 100%, and because they know who's going to be there, then they can staff it appropriately for that day to handle the number of people that'll be there. So it helps them in that way.
And another reason why I don't think park reservations would ever be going away is because, let's just be honest, all throughout the year, it's not going to be an issue selling all of them out. So there's going to be some available same day as time goes on.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not always going to be a problem. Like the demand is not going to be a problem that you're going to have to, you're not going to be able to find a reservation like the day before or even the day of in some cases.
Right.
If they'll even allow that.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to find that going forward. But they, again, they want to have an idea.
Yeah.
Of what they need to staff for and prepare for and all that good stuff. That's where their advantage comes in on that. So
here's a couple more observations on this. So a lot of people are saying, oh, I think the Disney World annual passes are going to be just like this one now, and it's going to be even more expensive. I don't think the price is going to change a ton for Disney World, because I think they're trying to do the same thing, and they don't need to raise the price, because the prices on the California ones hasn't changed. Really, I mean, it looks basically the same as it did 2019. But what I think the limitation is now, you're getting less value for that money. So essentially, they did raise the price because now you're limited to having to pick the 6 days. I think hopefully by October 1st, when this rolls out for Disney World, that annual pass holders will get 6, because right now we can only do 3. So hopefully we'll get the 6 if you have like the platinum that they currently have.
So I agree with you in the sense that I feel like Florida is going to open up more tiers, because let's take a look at this, right? What they did in California. 3 out of these 4 tiers are open to everybody, based on what I see.
Right.
Are open to everybody. The only one that's limited to Southern California is the Imagine Key. So it doesn't say on the other ones that you have to be in California at all.
Right. Not that we can tell.
For the 649 level. Yeah. Not that we can tell at this time. Now, if they get more details out that suggest that, then they could. But, I mean, the only one we see that's limited at all is to Southern California, and that was the Imagine. It appears if you wanted to, say, get a $649 annual pass and you live in on the East Coast, you could for Disneyland.
That's what it looks like. Again, we may not be reading the fine print on this detail enough.
Well, again, it just broke.
So the details will iron out. Yeah.
Right.
And hopefully payment plans, because right now Disney World, 2 of them are available to out-of-state, and the other 2, Silver and Gold, are Florida resident or DVC only.
So they'll probably come out with multiple tiers in Disney World as well.
Yeah. I mean, they have 4 tiers currently, Platinum Plus, Platinum, Gold, and Silver. But hopefully they'll have better options for out-of-state guests, but we'll see.
And you got to remember, Disney World's got to, they have to do theirs based on including water parks, not including water parks.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Right.
Whereas they don't have that in Disneyland. You just have 2 parks, and that's pretty much all you have to choose from.
Yep. So another thing that I heard pointed out that's interesting, that I think will obviously come to Disney World as well, There's a new restriction in the fine print that says you can only have 3 no-shows. So if you book a reservation and don't show up, if you do 3 of those, you are restricted for 30 days. You're basically on hold for 30 days for making another park reservation. So that's their way of, especially Disney World, I know because I'm guilty of it, booking a Hollywood Studios just so you can pull a rise or something like that. You don't show up. So that's, they're going to have this limitation on Disney World, I guarantee it, as well, so that they know if you book a reservation, you're coming, or if you're not, you're going to get penalized for not showing up after three no-shows. They're going to suspend your account, essentially, or restrict you from booking another reservation for 30 days. So that basically takes a month off your annual pass if you do a bunch of no-shows. So that'll keep you from trying to hoard, you know, a popular... Like, if I had a Magic Kingdom for October 1st and I have no intention of going, I'm just holding it, I'll get penalized for that in the future, which I don't, by the way. But I think that's a good thing for Disney in the sense that it'll help open it up for other people so people won't try to hoard dates that they don't really intend on going. It's kind of like the dining reservations. People will just hoard those, and then a few days before they'll let go of them because they know they aren't going to go. But I think that's a good restriction overall to put on it. That's a new one. And someone pointed out, I'm not as familiar with Disneyland, but there's no photo pass mentioned here, whereas I know Disney World, currently anyway, it's included. If they strip that out, then that's another thing that they're losing value on.
Well, what I think with this being relatively new story or new breaking, I don't think we have all the details. So yeah, I feel like that's probably going to be included. So
hopefully.
We got the majority. We got the important stuff.
Yeah. And I think another reason why Disney World's annual pass, I don't think the price is going to increase when it rolls out, is because they are getting ready to roll out the paid FastPass option, which I think... Hopefully, anyway, annual pass holders will get a chance to have like an add-on. I think that's what they're going to do is more like a la carte. You get to your base ticket stuff, and if you want to add this, you can add it to your annual pass for X amount. If you want to add some fast pass option or whatever they're going to call it in the future, you're going to have to pay for it. Or they're just going to make you pay when you get there, like they're doing in Paris, which would suck.
Gotcha.
But I think that's going to happen.
So, yeah. So, folks, just so you know, no existing pass holder rationalization going on here. Not at all.
Right. No, I mean, I think the price isn't really going to change, but I think they're going to, you know, the additional...
the price is going to change.
Well, eventually it'll go up, of course, but I'm talking about as of right now, I don't think the price is going to jump too much if it does, I think, because...
When's the last time a year went by and it didn't go up?
Well, this year, it hasn't gone up.
Well, yeah, they didn't sell it.
Well, as far as renewals, it didn't go up.
All right.
Jason bought one. They let him buy a new one.
Right. Same price.
Same price.
Yeah.
But I think they're prepping people for, like, this is a soft, like, hey, look at these. This is great. It's the same price. We're giving you guys all this, you know. They're softening the blow for what's coming, which is $10 per person per FastPass for... coming, something like that.
I mean, it's not all renewals. I mean, they wouldn't let me renew mine from 11 years ago, so.
If you sweet-talked them enough, you probably could.
All right, real quickly, as far as August goes, the Hall of Presidents has now returned to operation. The new show has remained unchanged from 2017, the only change being Biden's addition and, of course, Biden's speech.
Right, which is basically the swearing in. It's basically all he says. Someone made a really good observation about that, though, which I watched the show. But someone made an interesting observation because some news sources pointed out that the Trump animatronic looks better than it did when it was the speaking Trump. But I think what it actually is that the animatronic for the current president is probably the same, like, body. But they, because it has more movements, maybe the face wrapped around the head doesn't look as natural as the other ones that don't move as much.
So what you're saying is they don't waste money on doing a whole new expensive animatronic that moves and everything. They just
Yeah, they keep the same shell.
Reusing it.
Right. I think that's what they're doing, at least for the last,
kind of, to
the
a
last
degree.
Couple updates. Because a lot of people are saying the Biden animatronic doesn't look as good as it should either, but I bet it's because they're using the same animatronic they did for the Trump one, and they just changed the skin, essentially, which is kind of weird to talk about. But
yeah, I mean, it's going to be easier to have one that's going to just stand there and move.
Right. They just sort of move their head side to side like a stormtrooper at Rise of the Resistance, right?
Right. Yeah. Matter of fact, this might even be a stormtrooper body here. That they have
who knows?
Available.
It could be. So I think that's why the current president animatronic, it moves better, but maybe doesn't look as good as the others in the background that don't move as much because they don't have to. I think the face has to be more or less elastic, if that makes sense, because it talks, right? So,
yeah. Let's see. It looks like apparently Halloween has arrived.
Yes.
At the Magic Kingdom.
It is August, starting to, so.
Yeah. So, of course, that's what I think of.
My pumpkins are out already.
Yeah, you start seeing pumpkins, and your pumpkins are out already.
Yep. I happened to see touring plans today at Magic Kingdom, and they showed Small World. They're repainting like the inside. You know how the Walt Disney World Small World was all white, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like they're painting it different colors now. Like the clock and all that stuff is like dark blue, and there was some other colors. I'm trying to find the picture I saw, but I just thought, hey, they're actually finally making Small World look kind of more like the Disney World Land one, like better.
Because they figure it's the better version.
Oh, it's definitely the better version. But other than the fact that you're in a trough in the Disneyland version.
Didn't we do that as a show once, or did we just discuss it? Like when we took the attractions from each coast
we
and
did.
Compared them, which one was better?
Yeah, I think we did.
Or did we just take select ones?
We may have done like select ones or something, yeah.
Because I feel like I don't remember if we compared Small World, but if we were going to, it would definitely be the West Coast and that. That
yeah,
West Coast
I think
wins
overall,
in that case.
Yes. Yeah, I think overall. Like, there are things I like about the Disney World one better, but presentation-wise, you can't beat the Disneyland one. I mean, it's gargantuan.
Well, I mean, the outside, and just the fact that you start on it outside, I like that too.
But I do like that, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of that, though, just real quick, I was watching a video on I think it was like a Martin Smith video or something on pirates just when I was watching stuff, some classic stuff. Mm-hmm. And I got to thinking when I was watching, I was like, at the time that Pirates was built, I never really realized that it was the first attraction of that scale or with that type of human looking animatronics.
Right,
that's the very first one.
Right.
Cause I got to thinking about it. Cause back then I'm like, you know, we're like desensitized because there was plenty of attractions in our era that had it. So anytime I watched the creation of it, I wouldn't think, what's the big, you know,
it was groundbreaking.
I liked it because it was pirates, but I was like, it just hit me. I was like, wow, that was the first time they had anything. Cause before that they had Small World's basically like dolls.
Yeah.
And the Tiki Room was, you know, birds.
Right.
So I'm like, this was the first attraction of this scale that's ever built. And the funny thing about that is it still is a standard bearer even today. So,
Cool. Speaking of that, did I mention in my trip report last week that when I rode Pirates, the mayor, I guess, is it the mayor that they're dunking in the well scene? Is it his wife that's in the window at the top? At the,
yeah.
So
don't tell him, Carlos.
Right.
Don't be cheeking.
Right. So when we did Pirates this last time, that animatronic was like, it looked like, you know, when the Terminator loses its skin and it's just the robot looking pieces.
Oh, yeah.
So the animatronic of her, like she had, it was just, the window was slightly open and it was like a Terminator robot shell, whatever, like halfway sticking out the window. It didn't talk. Like that scene, like the dialogue, I think, was cut out because it wasn't operating, but.
Oh.
But you could see it hanging out of the window. I'm just like, that's really odd. Like, why would we see that? Why wouldn't they close it? But anyway.
You totally missed. They were in the process of changing it over to the Terminator overlay.
I guess
that they were going to do. I'm just kidding, folks, of course.
Yes.
Speaking in the world of movies, I guess I could make that transition since we said Terminator.
Go for it.
Insiders blame Disney CEO Bob Chapek for Scarlett Johansson. I like to call it Johansson, even though it's Johansson. Anyway, Black Widow lawsuit. For those that don't know, that the lawsuit is over, she would have had incentives involving the box office.
Right, the box office returns, yeah.
And Disney refused to restructure the deal whenever they planned on doing hybrid.
Yeah.
Because of COVID. Each side is making their case. The official response to it, they called it especially sad and distressing in its callous disregard for the horrific and prolonged global effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. So I reiterate that with, now don't get me wrong, this is billionaires versus millionaires. So, exactly, I mean, it's really a small, compared to the everybody else doesn't care. I mean,
these are first world problems here.
Right. Yeah, very much
so. At the minimum.
Right.
But
so,
go ahead.
I mean, I would say being in her place, she has a point. I mean, Disney, when Disney makes a response like that, they're shifting it to why is she, you know, making this over COVID-19? Well, why are you refusing to rework the deal over it as well?
Yeah.
why is it blamed to her?
Yeah, I can see both sides. It's like she does have a point. And again, she made like $20 million just for doing the movie or something like that. I think that's what she was paid just to do the movie.
Yeah.
But rightfully so, she was offered, or it was in her deal that she was getting a cut of the box office or whatever it was. And because it's being released on Disney Plus at the same time, her cut is obviously going to be much lower because she's not getting any of the Disney Plus revenue. So, yeah, she has a valid point as why, you know, there's a lawsuit.
Well, and two, there's an assumption being made here in a way that people were going to go to the box office in lieu of doing it on Disney Plus or watching it on Disney Plus. And the reason why I say that's an assumption is because the box office in general isn't exactly tearing it up right now.
Right. Right.
There's been a standard that's been kind of set as to what the expectations of good numbers are. Yeah. Now, I will say this. This past week, Jungle Cruise did actually quite well at the box office. Better than I think some people expected.
Yeah, better nice.
In comparison, but at the same time, it's also available on Disney Plus. So you have something to compare it to. So you got to question whether or not is it the fact that it was available on Disney Plus as far as Black Widow, or was it the level of interest wasn't really there to go see it at the box office?
Could be. But here's some insider. I kept hearing that Bob Iger is very upset about all this because he did a really good job managing relationships with actors and stars. In fact, I remember reading recently that he settled a dispute with David Muir and George Stephanopoulos at ABC News because they were kind of competing over who's the head honcho at ABC News. And Bob Iger settled that and, you know, made everything right between the two of them. So he's good at relationships, whereas Chapek doesn't seem to have that at all. And the fact that Disney is just sort of dismissing this as like, it's sad and blah, 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 I think that shows how Chapek maybe not so great at the relationship building thing. And now you're basically never going to have Scarlett Johansson in another Marvel movie probably over this. So you've just outed that and, you know, maybe upset potentially others involved in the movie and Marvel and damage some relationships there that might hurt in the future.
Right.
So,
yeah, I was going to say this article, the way we started this, I know we started talking about the lawsuit itself, but this was about, you know, Disney insiders blame Bob Chapek for this.
Right.
But as you were saying, this is a good example of him not being wanting to change this because it looks as though they blame his inexperience with handling talent, and he didn't think this one would come about or it wouldn't blow up in his face in this matter, which is not to say, the thing is, we're not even sure it has blown up in his face. And as anyone who's ever listened to this show knows, I'm not a defender of Bob Chapek by any means. I just call things like I see it. There's a lawsuit, yes, but that's doesn't mean it's blown up in his face yet. That's a little premature.
Yeah.
Because they're still making plenty of money off of this movie. It is reported, though, that Kevin Feige is upset by the lawsuit because he initially was against the simultaneous release as well. And, of course, he wants to rectify the situation with Johansson.
Yeah, if you want to make another Black Widow, I think you got to make it right with her at some point, right? I mean, you can replace her, sure, but it's not going to be consistent.
Right. Let's get to the Star Wars story.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the biggest or the most news, we should say. Stuff that people really want to know, because we've been hearing about this for quite some time.
Of course.
That this was coming, and we didn't know the...
Galactic Star Cruiser.
A stay at the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser.
Yep.
First of all, it does guarantee you entry into Rise of the Resistance.
Yes. Assuming the ride is operating, right?
Right. It says front of the line access to both of the Galaxy's Edge attraction, by the way.
Right.
So, I mean, if that's what you're interested in, then yeah. Basically,
you get a magic band.
That was a big one, though, is because people are all about rice still at the moment. So that's still kind of a big one, right?
Yeah.
So here's where the shock will come in. Is how badly do you want to guarantee your spot to Rise of the Resistance?
Sure.
And Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run. I mean, you'll guarantee that one, too.
Yeah.
Not that you needed to, but you will. Anyway, we got an example, a 3-day itinerary, what it might look like. We have that. Day one, arrive at Terminal 1 p.m.
I was going to say, so according to this schedule, you have about 45 hours for this entire experience. 45 hours.
Yeah. This is similar to that of a cruise ship, so you have basically a schedule.
Yes.
No free time. No.
Right.
Well,
I think some of these have multiple options, but I mean, you kind of... I watched the video that Disney put out about this, and there's like, you can stick to a schedule, or you can just sort of sit back and watch certain things happen. You don't have to be a part of everything, that kind of thing, but there's flexibility.
Okay. I'm going to run through the examples right quick. Arrive at 1.
Yeah.
Launch pod to the Star Cruiser, 1:15 to 1:30. Ship orientation, 1:45 to 2:15. This almost sounds like a college schedule. Let's see. Light refreshments, 3 p.m. to 3:30. Sabacc lessons from 3:30 p.m. to 4 p.m.
Interesting.
You know, that's just an example on a day one. And a day two has stuff like breakfast, 7 to 8. Transport to Batuu, 8:15 to 8:25. Rise of the Resistance, 8:45 to 9:30.
Which I thought was interesting because Rise doesn't typically open until at least 9. So you would obviously get on before anybody else. So you could be first on.
Yeah, I think that's the idea.
Yeah. Right.
A story moment, and they say, for example, you might broker a deal for a heist, arrange to steal a ship from the First Order, something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they give another day three example, breakfast, launch pod to terminal early in the morning. So you get an early departure, very similar to a cruise ship.
Yeah.
Just you're getting a galactic cruise ship.
Sure.
So let's get down to the fun part.
Okay.
Let's do the... pricing.
Yikes.
Per night that we're looking at.
Somewhere between ouch and boing.
Right. As well as the different cabin amenities. Yeah. Okay. Well, this is based on 2 guests per cabin, right? $1,209 per guest per night.
Yikes.
Or you would call that a $4,809 voyage total.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that this is only... I mean, we'll say what this includes, right? This is we're going to say that based on that price. So that would I'm going to go ahead and go and say that if you did 3 guests, that would reduce the amount per guest per night. However, your overall cost is still $5,299.
Yep.
4 guests again reduced per guest per night, but still $5,999. So $6,000 roughly if you want 4 people in your cabin.
Yeah.
Your tiny cabin as far as it looks like too, by the way.
For 45 hours of entertainment. $6,000 for 45 hours.
The only thing that includes, by the way, that includes admission to Disney's Hollywood Studios, because of your excursion. Not any of the other parks.
Right. Yep.
Just Hollywood Studios.
And
because of your excursion.
You have such a limited window. I guess you could leave Galaxy's Edge if you wanted to, but you have to get back on your ship at some point. So technically, I guess you could go ride Slinky Dog, but you may not have enough time to wait in line before you're due back on your ship, right? I mean, assuming.
Yes. You have to get back on your ship before it departs.
Exactly, right. I mean, right. So
you better have your passport with you just in case.
Right, exactly. Your galactic passport. I don't know how that's going to work, but I imagine you got to be back at a certain time on the shuttle to get back to, you know, the Galactic Star Cruiser. So you're not going to have enough time to go out and do something. Maybe I was like, I could probably go to baseline, but hang out there and then, you know, come back.
But and then you'll forget to go back to your ship.
Well, not at baseline, but I get what you mean. But yeah, 45 hours, you're not going to want to do anything else because you're paying a crap ton of money for 45 hours of entertainment.
For just this experience, yeah. So let's just go say what each voyage includes right quick. Yep. Okay, a two-night stay in the cabin, of course. You have the ongoing immersive interactive entertainment that are going on, you know, during the cruise, we'll say.
Yep.
The Star Cruise. Mm-hmm. Food and beverages on the Star Cruiser, excluding alcohol, of course.
Yes, of course. Of course.
So there is that. At least it is including your food, similar to what a regular cruise does. So I guess there's that.
You even get one at Docking Bay 7. So on your excursion to Batuu, you can have a free meal at Docking Bay 7.
Right. So what I would hope is similar to a cruise ship, that the included food and beverages in the actual Star Cruiser would be very good quality, as is akin to what it is on, like, Disney Cruise Line for the longest time. I'm sure the other cruise lines have caught up a good bit, but for the longest time, the food on a Disney cruise compared to another cruise line was just, there was no comparison. It's still really good food.
But, of course, just like cruise ships, they have the captain's table, which is an additional cost for food, right? So you have the included food, but you also have the option of an extra.
Well, I mean, there's options for extra, but there's no, like, captain's table on a Disney cruise.
Well, I'm just saying that it's called captain's table here to Star Cruiser, but it's the dining experience. That's an extra fee.
So you're comparing that to
Palo.
Something similar to like a Palo, or a Remy.
Right.
Yeah, or something along those. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, got you. And like I said, the one quick service meal at Docking Bay 7, because the only reason why you're getting a quick service meal there is because I guess you're only spending the one day there, whatever. I mean, it looks what it looks like as part of your experience in Galaxy's Edge. So again, it includes admission to Hollywood Studios for your excursion to Galaxy's Edge. That's the sole purpose. Valet parking, which that seems kind of odd to throw that in there.
Yeah.
Because it kind of ruins the whole illusion now, doesn't it? And it says valet parking.
Well, it's valet parking at the entry point, the port of entry, whatever you want to call it.
Right. You have to park your own personal ship.
Yeah, your own speeder.
Your own speeder, yeah. Exclusive Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser data ban, known on your home planet as a magic ban.
Oh, Lord. Which, again, it's like, okay, we're trying to phase these out, but let's give them something free. Let's throw these. We got tons of them. Let's give them a free magic ban.
Now, of course, this price, you know, it varies depending on what your party needs are, obviously, like how the ages, you know, for adults and children and so on and so forth.
Yep.
So, I mean, it gives you a range, what we just told you, though, ideas.
And by the way, this price is the starting price for, like, the basic. It's probably going to be more than that on most occasions.
So, just to give you a rundown of that, there is a standard cabin, right? Because there's three types of rooms you can choose from. A standard cabin, which would have, it says it can sleep 4 to 5. Configuration is a queen bed, 2 berths or bunk beds for 1 adult each, and a wall pull-down bed for 1 adult, if sleeping 5.
Whoa.
Cabin would have the usual stuff, mini fridge, hair dryer, and cabin, you know, all the usual stuff that they would have in that, on a standard cabin. I don't see the dimensions, but everything I've seen suggests that is almost like a cruise ship-esque dimensions.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, then you have Galaxy Class Suite, which, interestingly enough, doesn't sleep as many, but it is considered to be like a 1-bedroom. A queen bed, a 2-wall pull-down, and, of course, the other usual amenities, right?
Yep.
Then we have a grand captain suite, which is kind of the comparison to a 2-bedroom which can sleep 8. They still don't look like the largest things in the world, but you'll be able to fit more people in it. So it has 2 queen beds, 2 berths, and 2 wall pull-down beds. So, yeah.
Right.
Of course, like we said, they all include the usual stuff, mini fridge, hair dryer, safe, phone, TV, all that good stuff. I'm wondering what kind of TV you're going to be able to watch in there. Like, I'm sure they'll have a different
right.
set. Like, you know, when you walk into a regular Disney hotel now, you have yeah. the Disney TV.
Right. I doubt they'll have, like, the park hours or anything like that.
Yeah.
It says interactive TV, didn't it say that? So it's probably, they'll probably create something for it, yeah.
It should be kind of neat as far as what they do to make it Star Wars, like to feel like you're immersed.
Right.
That should be pretty neat. So, Adam, when are you going to book your Star Cruise?
Well, I think I'm going to hold out because I think I will be able to go to actual space for less money in a couple of years. So the way space travel is going.
Yeah. I was going to say, Elon Musk has already... Yeah.
Jeff Bezos. I'm just waiting until they... make it cheaper than Disney to go to actual space, and then maybe this will be affordable. I don't know. But
yeah, and then I think Ashton Kutcher recently canceled his, so you might can get in on his.
Yeah, see, there's always that possibility that I can get picked as an alternate for one of right. the billionaires going to space. So
he missed his spot.
Yeah. This I may have a better shot than going here. No, okay. In all seriousness, I probably will not do this anytime soon, but it does look cool. I will look forward to seeing people's vlogs about it and whatnot, because I watched the stuff that Disney put out where they had this table discussion about it. I could read between the lines that there's some cool stuff where, you know, they developed this the same time they did Galaxy's Edge. So this is not like trying to add on. This was developed at the same time. So the story of, say, Smuggler's Run is you get to continue that story on the ship, on the Star Cruiser, and vice versa, like back and forth. Like, there's stuff you can do on Smuggler's Run that you won't be able to do unless you're on the Star Cruiser, right? Or, you know, like the coaxium you steal, they talk about you can actually give it to somebody on the Star Cruiser, or somebody will ask you to steal it for them, or you know, things like that. So in Rise of the Resistance, they talked about being part of the same story. So I wondered, in Rise of the Resistance, is the Galactic Star Cruiser ship somewhere out there when you're going through and you see out into space and the ships are out there fighting or whatever? I wondered if it's there. I'm gonna have to look for it. I wonder if there'd
be a connection
hiding it. Yeah, they hint in the video that Rey and Kylo Ren are basically going to have a duel at some point, and you get to watch it or something like that. They were hinting at you get to be in the scene with them as they're dueling or whatever. So there's going to be some things that they haven't talked about, but they're hinting at, that are going to be really cool. But again, it's not worth that to me, because... like, if it was just me going by myself, maybe, but dragging my family into all this, who they don't care about Star Wars at all, I don't think it's worth the extra $800 per person per day, or $750 that I'm going to have to shell out. So, if we did a podcast trip, maybe I would shell out the $849.
Well, I got to thinking, I was like, on a regular basis, I don't even know if I spend this much money just on a regular trip.
Yeah.
Ever. I mean, maybe once.
Right.
but I don't think I normally...
Right.
I don't even think I've come close to this amount.
Right.
And this is just for this experience.
Well, I think Jason, if he was here, he would mention the fact that he spent less than this on a VIP tour, and now you can do Rise of the Resistance, like I think, anyway, where you can do that on the VIP tour.
We think.
Right. You could also just spend this for 7 hours for a VIP tour and probably have just as much fun. Well, again, it won't be Star Wars-centric, but this is really cool, don't get me wrong. If Disney invited us on a media preview, I would totally go, but paying out of pocket right now, I just don't, especially, like, I don't know, maybe by myself or with, like, if we did a trip, like we said, podcast trip, I would do it, but... my family are not going to get the money's worth out of this. They're not going to care about any of this.
Well, you know, if we did like a podcast trip and then just did this,
yeah,
we could split the cost three ways.
Yeah.
And that would make it more manageable.
It would still be really expensive for what it is.
Yeah.
I think Pete from the Diz, he did like, if you did a concierge suite on a three-night cruise, it was still less than this for,
wow,
for the Dream. So yeah, it was still, or the equivalent, wow, or very close to the same price.
There you go. And this is probably just the initial pricing, because they just like they did with the Wish, the initial sailing on that one was astronomical, yeah, as far as the pricing. So this is might just be the same way. Maybe they feel like they're going to have a lot of people that are willing to pay whatever they want to just to say they were the first.
Right. Oh, the first. To do this. This is going to seem like, yeah, a huge success initially. But
yeah,
I know there's only like 100 rooms or so, 130 maybe. I forgot exactly what the number was. It's not a lot. It's very small compared to, you know, others. But
I could be wrong, but I don't think they're going to be able to sustain this type of pricing.
That's what I was thinking. It's like, yeah, the Star Wars fans and the media hype and all that, it's going to be huge for the first month or two, where people are just going to be like flooding this, trying to get it, mm-hmm, and it's going to be sold out and everything. But after a few months, unless they change the experience that much, which I don't think they're going to, it's just too expensive for just everybody to go do this over and over again, especially every 3 days. You're not going to be like, hey, we just did this last month, but we're going to shell out another $6,000 to do it again. You know, it's like you're not going to have a lot of repeat customers, I don't think.
Mm-mm. This is like a once in a lifetime experience at this
price. Cost. So I don't know, a year in, like they're going to be like 50% off rates for this, like to book it, you know.
I think they're really overestimating the amount of money the average Star Wars fan makes.
Well, I mean, I think every Star Wars fan would want to do this once, but
would they want to pay that?
I think a lot.
Or
will.
Could they?
Well, they've given him a year to save up, because I believe didn't it say August 20th, 2022 is the first voyage?
Right.
I think it was.
Well, like I said, there's always going to be somebody who's going to do this no matter what it costs. They were going to do this no matter. I mean, they would mortgage their house to do this if they had to. Yeah. I mean, there were some people just that crazy about it. But at this price tag, I'm going to have to see what that first voyage, we'll call it, looks like before I would consider paying that kind of money.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
And it does say on the website it's 100 cabin Star Cruiser. So 100 rooms, I'm sure a few of those are suites or the other categories. Mm-hmm. I'd say the majority of them, though, are probably the standard room that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Standard cabin. So I just don't see this lasting long term.
At this price?
Yeah. I just don't see it.
We'll see.
They're going to have to cut the experience like in half to justify lowering the price, I'm sure. But I don't know. Maybe. I don't see it working long term.
Well, here's the other thing. How many of the things that they have available on this this first cruise is going to still be working in 6 months?
That's a good point too, right? Yeah, everything has to work. Like the windows, like is it loop? Are you going to literally have to, you know, is it going to break down and you just see like a blue screen of death outside?
You know? Well, I mean, I say this, I'm not trying to be like a smart aleck about it, but let's just say Disney has a history of opening big and then something breaks or doesn't work like it's supposed to, and it just stays that way all the time.
Right. What is the Yeti going to be for the Galactic Star Cruiser? Yeah.
You got the Yeti. How many times did you go through Splash Mountain and something wasn't functioning the way it was supposed to?
Yeah, a lot.
I mean,
especially the little jumping bear rabbit, which
I mean, there was
seemed like a
even if it wasn't that one, there was always something I noticed that wasn't functioning like it was supposed to.
Right. Yeah.
So,
speaking again, this just popped into my head too. I don't think I mentioned it last week on Rise of the Resistance. I think I mentioned the lightsaber, the Kylo Ren thing wasn't working, but the timing got off when we went through the gun room, you know, where the space battle's going on outside. So by the time our vehicle got to the end of the room, I was watching the screens, and the screens reset before we exited the room. So it was like a space battle, and then it reset, and then it was like nothing. And then it was like you could see the space, but the battle wasn't going on while it was waiting for the next group to come in. So I guess the timing got off a little bit, and I got to see the screens reset, but I just thought that was interesting. So, again, little glitches like that are probably going to happen on this, too. So
we'll see. All right, so, I mean, that was a bit of a long news segment that we had there, but we have a segment that I've been wanting to do, because we did one, how many episodes back was it? It was a while back for the Haunted Mansion.
That's right, yeah.
So we're going to end this episode doing another attraction that I thought had some interesting history to it, and that would be Rockin' Roller Coaster, featuring or starring Aerosmith.
And it just had an anniversary a few weeks, last week.
Yeah, July 29th, 1999 was the day that it opened. And what's interesting about that is that it was actually originally planned to open when Sunset Boulevard opened. That was what they were hoping for, right, which was 1994.
Right.
Yeah. But Disney had a few problems during that time period. Like, say, opening an entire park in Europe that bombs.
Some financial issues there.
Right, yeah. Kind of, you know, affected their budget a little bit during that time period.
Yeah.
I guess the big thing with this is they had their roller coaster that they wanted to do. They wanted to theme it to rock and roll. When they were doing this, they wanted to get a band to feature in it, right?
Right, yeah.
So the band that they really wanted the first time, originally wanted, was the Rolling Stones. I mean, they were thinking,
I could see that.
Who better? Sure. Yeah, who better that exemplifies what rock and roll was at that point in time?
Longevity.
Than the Rolling Stones.
That kind of thing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Keith Richards, he will be here with the cockroaches whenever the nuclear holocaust comes. Yeah. You know, that sort of thing.
He just survives, so, right?
Yeah.
And the Beatles are too expensive, I'm assuming. But of course, yeah.
Well, see, I never saw any mention that they tried.
Yeah, I doubt it. Yeah. They're probably big anyway to go after.
Yeah. And maybe they figured the Beatles' music really didn't,
not up tempo enough.
Fit with going.
Other than Helter Skelter, maybe. That'd be the only song you could do.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I guess that would work.
Yeah, I'd be the only one.
We could probably go through and, you know, think, find what tracks would you do if it was this band? What tracks would you do if it was the Stones, now that I think about it? I mean, I know they have quite a few, but...
There's a few, maybe.
I don't think it would have had the same...
Satisfaction,
to it, yeah.
Anyway.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
When Disney approached them, they wanted $10 million a year. Whew. Use their likeness and six songs.
There's no way it would generate that much revenue.
Yeah, yeah. And Disney was like, it's not going to end up being worth it for us.
Yeah.
So, of course, Disney decided to move forward with plans to do it without any band at that point.
Yeah.
Because they did have a backup plan that they were just going to do, you know, music that they could get licensed, you know what I mean? Just licensed music that they could get something with a general license that they were going to use, you know, just make it, you know, theme it to rock and roll, maybe 50s, 60s, 70s, you know.
Yeah. That would be kind of cool to interchange like different styles.
If they ever needed to or wanted to, they could go back to that plan, I would think. It's a good fallback plan. Of course, the eras that they were going to use, I mean, we're talking 20 years have gone by. There's been two more decades that we could add into it.
That's true.
Since then. But their second choice, history suggests, we'll put it that way. Some of this is, of course, speculation and rumor because we didn't actually ask Disney this. Was U2, actually, was who they approached.
I could see that. They have longevity as well. Sure. I guess that makes sense.
So it's reported, though, that Bono had no interest in partnershipping with Disney. Was what happened there. He had absolutely no interest in being involved in that. So I could see that too.
Yeah, right.
being a thing.
Sure.
So here we go. It's coming down. June of 1998 comes around. Track is complete. The building's complete. Yeah. They don't have a band signed. So it is reported that Kiss was approached. I don't know at what point in this. But there was not an actual amount given, but they said similar to the Rolling Stones, the asking price was too steep.
Just too high, yeah.
They said it was comparable to the Rolling Stones offer. So I'm assuming it was in that same range, right?
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So just so happens that during this time period that Disney is already working with Aerosmith, because Aerosmith is working on the soundtrack for Armageddon.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which is, that was 1998. Yeah. Which turned out to be Aerosmith's only number one single in their entire history of their music.
Wow.
Was I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. Yeah.
Makes sense.
So, you know, Disney's kind of on the fence about using them to start with, because they're like, you know, because they had not exactly had, they look like they were on the downhill side of their career at this point, because it was just beginning. That's what it seemed like. But then they have a number one single and they're like, you know what? Let's go with these guys. Let's see what we can do with them. So they approach Steven Tyler.
Yeah.
He loves the idea not to take a line out of the attraction.
Wait a minute.
I love that idea. I wonder if it's really, really sad. They just put that in the theme, in the attraction.
Maybe they just recorded their first conversation with him. And they're like, wait a minute. I love that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the amount that they were willing to do it for was reportedly a tenth of what the Rolling Stones asked. So just to give you an idea of that.
So $1 million a year.
So Disney's like, hey, we can work with that.
Yeah, that sounds more feasible, definitely.
And that's for 8 songs.
Wow. Yeah.
And their only request was to include a song off of their latest album, which is one of the reasons why one of the recordings in the Ride is not as well known as the others, that being the Nine Lives track from their, you know, album Nine Lives that was released in 1997. So that was the last album that was the latest album they had out at that point in time.
Right. Okay.
And of course they had to re-record and redo certain lyrics of some of their classic songs to a degree. So they kind of, you know, they went to the studio and did a little bit of recording for this, for the mixes on this. For instance, the one track involves the last song in it being Love in an Elevator.
Yes.
And they're singing that part. Yeah. And at the very end, they kind of just add that Love in a Roller Coaster part to the very end.
Right, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, obviously so it's not part of the song, the regular song.
Right. And of course, he has to lay down stuff like the launch, the 3, 2, 1, which, you know, has to lay that stuff down. You know, I've always thought that in that launch right there when they have him count down, I thought it would be really cool if at the beginning of at least one of the tracks they would have him do his, you know.
Sure.
You know.
For the launch.
The
Why not?
That's probably the best I've ever done that. Anyway.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, the best I've ever pulled that off.
Okay. Good. Sounded great.
Anyway, fun fact here, the music equipment in the pre-show area.
Yeah.
So, you know, the pre-show where we get to see, backstage, like we were just referencing, backstage passes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So all that equipment that's out there in front was actually donated by Aerosmith, or a good bit of it, including
the Black Les Paul.
That's just, yeah. Which, by the way, early on in the working days of this attraction, they would actually have a cast member, whenever that line says, Chris, can you grab my Black Les Paul? They actually have a cast member go in there and get the guitar and just walk out the door for that brief seconds or whatever. I guess they, just to add effect, I guess. I don't know. But it's not really necessary, and they probably just realize that. It works without it, in other words.
Yeah, everyone's already out of the room by the time somebody walks in.
Nowadays they are.
Yeah, it's like no one's going to stick around, so.
Yeah. Let's see. There's some other stuff I'm going to get to, but opening ceremony, as we said, was July 29th, 1999. The guests in attendance had the privilege of actually riding with the band members. So, you know, it was invitation only for the event, but back in those days, it was not the same as it is now as far as when they do an attraction.
Sure.
Right? So, like, they had invitation only for that, and like I said, some of the guests in attendance had the privilege of riding with the band. It was reported that Steve Tyler and Joe Perry rode it 12 times that day before actually leaving. So, wow.
Yeah, I heard that they did it a lot. That's crazy.
Yeah, they apparently loved the ride.
Yeah, I've seen videos of Steven Tyler there like just a few years ago.
Yeah, he goes back and does it every once in a while.
He was signing autographs and everything out there. So,
and that was him in like, what, mid-70s still doing it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was loving it.
Yeah, I think he was like 68 at the time or 70.
Yeah.
Whatever it was.
I don't know. Whatever he is now. I mean, I know he's in that range. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
I think he's probably not mid-70. I think he's actually the same age as my mom. Okay. So 73, 4. No. The equipment in the queue, by the way, is also from several different eras of Aerosmith history.
He's 73, by the way. I just looked it up. Sorry. Go ahead.
73. So I knew they were in the same age range. Yeah, the equipment in the queue is from several different eras of Aerosmith. The hand gesture, if we want to talk about that, that became a point.
What was that, 4 or 5 years ago that happened? Yeah.
It's funny that it took that many years for it to become a point of contention.
Yeah.
Somebody like pointed it out. Yeah. They did decide to make a change based on that.
Right.
So let's just say that.
That's basically when he's saying, wait a minute, I love that idea.
Yeah, he puts it over his forehead.
Doing it, yeah.
So they just easily cropped in a finger, pretty much, is what they did.
Yeah, or something, yeah. Right. And I remember Steven Tyler posting on Twitter about that, and he basically, I think he was wearing a hat with the word on it or something, and he was just like, yeah, not very subtle. I remember the picture.
Let's get into some of the specs right quick, okay? So the ride vehicles, they are 1962 Cadillac.
Oh, yeah, right.
The launch is from 0 to 60 in 2.8 seconds. I actually used to have a shirt that said that, too. It said all kind of stuff
on it. But isn't it actually like 57? I don't think it's 60. I mean, cause
it's probably roughly 57, 58, probably. Yeah, but I think it's 57. 0 to 60, they always round all of these things off.
Right. I mean, it's...
You know, I got to thinking about it. It's at the time that this was built, it was one of the fastest launches. It's still... does pull some of the highest G's for a launch.
Yeah, it's a fast launch. But Tron is going to be slightly faster when it opens. So
the 5 G's that you experience at the launch are comparable to a jet taking off from a aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
So that's what that would be compared to. So, I mean, it's actually pretty good.
Yeah. Nowadays, though, a Tesla can go 0 to 60 in like 2 seconds, so. That's true. I mean, like 2.5 seconds. That's true. Just saying.
But again, like I said, in the time period.
Yeah, I mean.
It was actually fairly, yeah. So each ride vehicle has its own soundtrack, of course, and it has a license plate that's in the back of the vehicle, so you really couldn't see which one you're going to get ahead of time. So you can only see what you can look at the back of it if you know which one it is and say, hey, I know what they're listening to.
Yeah, right.
As it's about to launch.
So it tells you what soundtrack it is what you're saying, based on the back of the car.
Basically, yes. The license plate has, say, for instance, they say things like the first one here is one quick limo. So it's actually 1QK LIMO. You know, it's like you would do with a customized tag, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And that one has the Nine Lives track that we were just talking about. There's one of them, this You Go Babe, which they actually changed later to You Go Girl. I guess they thought that babe was probably, you know, not the best language to use. So they changed it to You Go Girl later.
Yeah.
But that one is Live in the Elevator and Walk This Way.
Okay.
And then when they have one that basically just spells out bye-bye, that's the combination of Young Lust, F-I-N-E, and Love in an Elevator. Then they got one that's H-A-T-R-F-F-C, basically saying hate traffic.
Yeah.
And then it has Back in the Saddle / Dude.
Oh, yeah.
Is also
that's probably
in that
would be
one.
My favorite of the...
Yeah, that one's pretty cool because the Back in the Saddle at the beginning especially.
Yeah.
It was the one we used to get all the time back in the day. We didn't even know there was other songs for the longest time. And then the last one on here is Too Fast for You, as in 4 and then the letter U. Of course, then 2 is also the number. But Sweet Emotion is the track for that one.
Oh, that's cool.
They do have a 6th limo, just in case they have one that breaks down, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, in general, they have these 5 in rotation pretty much the whole time, which seems kind of difficult to do. You think that doesn't seem like it's enough to have 5 limos on there at one time, but maybe it does work out that way. Who knows?
Well, I've noticed Slinky Dog has 5. Mine Train also has 5, so they can do it. It's small tracks, but they can do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Plus, we don't know, like, behind the scenes, if there's a holding place for the vehicle before it comes around the corner. It's waiting to see if the You know what I mean?
Right. Well, you know, there's at least there's one at the launch. There's one at the load loading station. Mm-hmm. There's at least one at the unload, and then maybe one in between the unload and the, and then the one on the track. There is at least a one break run halfway in, so they could stop there if needed. So
the timing on it is usually pretty good. I don't I mean, I don't recall having to wait long, and you know, it seems to be around the same time. It's very rare that you have to wait longer.
Yeah.
At any of those points where it stops, but yeah, the timing on it's pretty quite good.
Every now and then, I've gotten held at the exit tunnel briefly before you get to the exit. Like there's another train at the exit, but it's not so backed up or anything that you feel like are going to get hit by another train. But yeah,
Uncle Joe Benson was the original DJ used on it on the radio. And then the current voice had, I can't remember how long Bill Uncle Joe Benson was. He was an LA disc jockey that was used for the beginning, but they changed him not too long after the opening. And the current voice is Bill St. James, which anyone who ever listened Sunday morning to the national radio program Flashback, they will recognize his voice because he did that for a number of years.
Yeah, the guy's voice is familiar, but maybe I just know it from this. Look, it's Steven Tyler's hat. Possible. Yeah.
All right, so more specs. It has three inversions, up to 5 G's of force. It is actually the most intense ride at Walt Disney World, which is not really, you know, it's pretty easy to figure that one out when you see what else there is. But
right, definitely.
Fun fact here as well, and if you think about it, it's pretty obvious. Only coaster at Walt Disney World that features inversions. There is no other coaster that has inversions.
Yep.
Created by Vekoma, or at least I've always, that's the way I've always pronounced it. I think I'm saying it right. 3,403 feet long, max height of 80 feet.
Yeah.
Cobra roll, one corkscrew.
Basically, right after the launch, you go right into the Cobra roll, right? The first.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, you know, with everything being in the dark and you first start to go upside down, I think, you know, because in my mind, I was thinking I was going into a loop. And I even still thought of that after I got off the first time.
Yeah.
It was only after I learned it was a Cobra roll that I paid attention to what I was doing.
Right, yeah.
To how I was moving.
Yeah, it's hard to know until you're trying to really focus on it, yeah.
Yeah, because like, I mean, I was thinking, oh, I went upside down, so I'm thinking loop. But no, it was actually a Cobra roll. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Which is still kind of cool to me to think of it that way. But anyway. Linear.
Induction.
What is it? Yeah, motors are actually used for the launch. That was pretty inventive at the time.
Yep.
And that's also where I get the launch force is about the same as the launch off of an aircraft carrier, as I already mentioned.
Yeah.
The speakers, they have two tweeters and a mid-range in the headset and then a subwoofer underneath. So, I mean, if you ever wanted to know about how many speakers. If you had to guess about the price tag on it, what would you say the price tag on it was?
$1,998.99.
We don't know exactly. We just know what it's rumored to be, really.
I mean, nowadays you're talking billions for... Right. I would
some
say
of them, yeah.
Like 50 million or something. I don't know. I'm guessing.
Yeah, 50 million is actually what it's rumored to be.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Good job.
I was just guessing. I was trying to think 20 years ago what would be a lot.
Right. Now, in case you haven't noticed in the queue, you know, you have the rumor it has like posters of artists, and probably one of the reasons why you'd think, why are they putting these in here? Because in some cases, it's not the most famous in the world. Because the ones they're allowed to put in there have already ties at that particular point in time to Disney, right? So basically, all they have now are Disney-owned Hollywood Records artists.
I see. That makes sense.
Like, can you think if you don't recognize who it is that you're seeing in there, that's the reason why.
Yeah. That nowadays, makes sense. I get it.
Now, back in the day, they had, when this first started, they actually had some that you would recognize, like Britney Spears, for instance. They had her in there, you know, but Disney, the ties to Disney and music artists, not the most notable ones lately or in recent years. I don't know if you ever noticed that, like you don't recognize who these artists are.
Yeah, I never really paid attention.
So, yeah. There you go. So it has a reputation, and I never thought about it, but it made sense to me when I heard this. It has a reputation as being one of the smoothest launch coasters. When it comes to launches,
it is very smooth, yeah.
And I got to thinking about the launch coasters I had been on. So I was like, of the ones that I've been on, yes, it is the smoothest. When I got to thinking about that, I was like, yeah, I don't know what it is about launch coasters that aren't particularly smooth. Well, one of the launch coasters that I have been on is the Hulk, but it goes straight into a turn. So it is I think it, if there's any smoothness there at all, I think that kind of takes your focus off of it.
Yeah.
Because that coaster is very intense.
Right.
Overall.
Yeah.
120 speakers for the 24 guests that it will hold. I think that pretty much wraps up the facts on it right there. I don't think I have anything else really to add as far as the facts on it go.
Okay.
Yeah, that pretty much is the skinny of Rock and Roller Coasters. I thought there were some interesting facts in there, which is why I wanted to kind of cover it. And we had done these before, and it was just past the birthday of it anniversary. It's been 22 years, and Aerosmith is still in it. Although they have removed their merchandise from the shop, which were led to some rumors a couple of years ago as to whether or not they were planning on replacing them, but I don't see...
Yeah, the only clone of it that I know of is Disneyland Paris. It has at the Studios Park, and it has closed to make room for a Marvel-themed overlay of it.
Right.
So I do wonder if in the future they would try to do something similar. Maybe not Marvel, because Florida can't really do that necessarily, depending on what it is, because they already have Guardians at Epcot, so I don't know what they would do there, but I don't know. I feel like at some point they're going to drop Aerosmith and they're going to go with something that's already IP-based.
Well, if they're going to do it, it's going to be during the current CEO's reign.
Yes, it would definitely be. So look for it in the next few years. Yeah. That's going
to
happen.
Well, I hope they don't get rid of the ride itself, because it's fine.
Yeah, I don't think they ever would. They would just retheme it. But again, to save the $1 million a year, if they're still paying that 22 years later.
Yeah.
I think they would probably just make it the East Coast version of Incredicoaster, for example, or something, and do something like that.
Well, I mean, I got to thinking about, the bands we talked about that could have potentially been the ones that they were going to do it. I got to thinking about each of those bands, like what tracks would use, and it just didn't feel right. Maybe it's because we already had Aerosmith, though, but Aerosmith just seems to be perfect. Like, their style of music seems to be perfect to do this to.
Yeah, the tempo and how, a lot of the tracks are...
Yeah, the choices.
They kind of fit, yeah.
Again, I was like saying, you couldn't think of Rolling Stones songs, but their second choice, if they'd even done it, U2, what U2 songs would you use that fit that?
Yeah.
I mean, their style of music don't even fit doing an intense coaster, in my opinion.
I mean, you could probably wedge something in there, but it would fit as well as Aerosmith did, but I think at some point they're just going to drop the whole rock and roll everything, because it does feel a little, I think that whole corner of Hollywood Studios doesn't feel as Disney. I mean, I would say Tower of Terror is probably more so, but Rock and Roller Coaster never really, to me, felt like a Disney kind of thing. Just because it's, Aerosmith isn't known as their, family-friendly band. Most of their songs, even the songs in the ride, aren't very family-friendly if you listen to them.
Right.
Young Lust, for example. Love in an Elevator.
I can't remember exactly how he put the line. They talk about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and then they took, of course, they were sober, so you take away the drugs and you have more time for the sex, I think it was, or something like that. I can't remember how you put the line.
Yeah, but doesn't surprise me at all. Anything you say, Steven Tyler said, wouldn't surprise me. It doesn't, I don't know. It just seems like as Disney starts to reshape the parks to fit a certain image, I think this probably will go away at some point, right? I mean, be rethemed.
Possibly.
Yeah,
but I could see a couple of Kiss songs that would work in there that would actually feel right. And Rolling Stones, I can't think of the tempo that would fit personally, but I mean, gosh, $10 million a year. I mean, that's, they obviously didn't really need that. They were just throwing that number out there in case they bid on it and actually get paid on that.
Yeah, and again, if Disney actually agreed to that, the ride would have lasted a year, and then they would have been like, "Forget this." Long. Yeah,
they would have had to have made up for that contract. Speaking of which, though, another attraction that I don't think we talked about that recently had merchandise removed that was related to the attraction was Dinosaur, right?
Right.
So similar to Rock and Roller Coaster, although Rock and Roller Coaster is still there, just their main. Like it says, Rock and Roller Coaster starring Aerosmith. Like it still stars Aerosmith, but you used to could buy their merchandise in there, and used to could buy merchandise related to them, and then that went away. it started right. being more, you know, generic Disney, related more to Mickey type Rock and Roller Coaster merchandise. Yeah. And now very generic stuff is in Dinosaur. So it makes one wonder, of course, it's brought the rumor about, is Dinosaur in danger of being changed? I kind of hope it doesn't, because when I think of Animal Kingdom, the only ones over there that right. I, like, say I have to do is probably, or I consider must-dos for me, now this is just for me talking,
yeah,
is probably Flight of Passage, Everest, and then Dinosaur would be the other one. The Safari, I don't consider it a must anymore because there's no storyline for me, so it just kind of ruined some of it to me. So.
I still like doing the Safari because you always get a different experience on the Safari. I still like doing it.
Is it that much different than I can get most places at this point? With
I think
Disney's
is better. I think it's better than any Safari you'll do.
I would hope it still stays a step above, but what I mean is, like, it takes something away from it with no storyline. Sure. It's not as Disney. So.
Sure.
Anyway, I think we can wrap that up and tell you that you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and that is all at TWTM Podcast. We have a Spreadshirt store in which you can buy your exclusive TWTM merchandise, including the Rafts Are a Ride shirt. That is shop.spreadshirt.com/TWTM Podcast. Don't forget, we are on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel. You can search for TWTM Podcast.
And you can visit our website as well to find links to all those things and more, including blog posts. And that is travelingwiththemouse.com. You can also email us podcast@travelingwiththemouse.com.
So for Adam and Adam, my name is John. And this has been Traveling with the Mouse. And I hope you will join us on our next trip. I'm loving this.
No, I don't know. I love that idea.
Says. Yeah, I love that idea. How about some backstage passes?